This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
You know, there's a tale as old as time about a man named Siddhartha Gautama. Siddhartha was born of wealth, and he one day decided to come down from his palace to see how people actually lived. And he was horrified. He saw the poverty. He saw people starving. And he decided right then and there to give up his wealth, live an ascetic life, and seek enlightenment. And that man's name was also, well, maybe I phrased that the wrong way, but Siddhartha is also known as the Buddha and is considered the founder of the Buddhist religion. And I bring that up because his story finds many parallels with the story of today's guest. Remy Adeleke was born of Nigerian royalty. His father was a chief, a very educated man who wanted to do everything he could for his country, Nigeria, to make it prosperous. And unfortunately, Remy's father passed away at a very young age, leaving Remy at 5 years old, his brother, and his mother in a place where they were penniless. His mother had to move Remy and his brother back to the United States where she came from. And Remy grew up on the streets of the Bronx. He barely graduated from high school, ended up becoming a scam artist and a drug dealer, and found himself on the wrong side of the law. But through a twist of fate, Remy ran into a United States Navy recruiter who changed his life. Remy joined the Navy, ended up eventually becoming a Navy SEAL, and served his country proudly as an operator for that elite group. I brought Remy back onto the show. He's been on the Warrior Soul podcast before to talk about his new book, Transformed. And I have to say, it's the best book I've read this year. An absolutely enthralling piece of writing. I literally could not put it down once I started picking it up. And what you'll learn from this episode and also from the book, I highly encourage you to get this book because there's so many lessons in it, is that even though Remy had transformed on the surface, there was a deeper, more meaningful transformation that still had to take place. And according to Remy, that transformation is still going on. Remy is also an actor. He's appeared in the movie Transformers The Last Night, and just an all-around awesome guy. You definitely need to check him out. You definitely need to get the book. It is an absolute must-read, and I will have a link to it up on the show notes. Just a couple of quick announcements before we get into the interview. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. My name is Chris Albert, and this podcast is meant to motivate and inspire U.S. military veterans and anybody else willing to listen to live their absolute best lives. We deliver tools, tactics, ideas, and strategies from some absolutely amazing people to push you forward, to help you to become the person you were always meant to become. And it's an absolute pleasure for me to do this show. We don't ask for anything in return. All we ask is that you head over to iTunes. if you like the show and write us a rating and review. It really helps us to spread word about the show. And if you can, the highest compliment you could give us is sharing this episode out with somebody who needs to hear it. Beyond that, I want to give a quick thanks over to the good people over at F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome packets of macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate, with pecan butter, with sea salt. So delicious. It's a quick snack that you could bring with you anywhere. And they're sending boxes of this stuff out to the troops on the front lines to help them augment their MREs while they're on deployment. Great people, great product. Head over to www.droppingfbomb.com. Use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout, and you'll get yourself 20% off your first order. And with that, let's get into this conversation with Mr. Remy Adeleke about his book, Transformed. Remy Adeleke, how you doing, man?
Doing good, brother. How about yourself?
I'm doing outstanding. Remy was a previous guest here on the Warrior Soul podcast. He came on a bit earlier prior to his book being published. And if you don't know his story, we're going to get into it a bit today. But basically, his story goes back to some of the oldest stories known to man. I mean, if you look at the story of the Buddha, a prince who came down and saw the suffering that people were going through and then went through this whole process to reach enlightenment. That's kind of what Remy went through. Born of Nigerian royalty. Father died at an early age, came to the States, was living on the streets of the Bronx, and then decided to become a Navy SEAL. Went out there, served this country. And that's a transformation in and of itself. But as we'll get into, there was a much larger transformation in Remy as time went on. And as Remy told me just before we hit record here, that transformation is still very much going on in a constant process. The book is called Transformed. You guys can find it on Amazon. We're going to get you links for this, but I'm really looking forward to talking about this because this is one of the few books I've read from cover to cover almost in one sitting. I really couldn't put it down when I started picking up. So Remy, number one, thank you for coming on. And number two, thank you for writing this book.
No, thank you. And it's cool you said it's so, so crazy, man. I maybe about five times a day, I get people who have read the book who say, I read it from cover to cover. I read it in a day. I read it in a week. I couldn't put it down. I finished it. I read it. It's the fastest book I've ever read. And so it's super encouraging to hear that. And in my mind, I'm always wondering, like, okay, like, what's the lesson behind that? I'm still trying to find a lesson. What should I be learning through this? But thank you for the encouragement on that. Cause I put everything into writing that book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole idea of, and kind of like I said, this story itself kind of harkens back to some of the ancient stories of people who have to go on this quest, you know, and thinking back to your own life, you know, from the time when you were a kid, from a very young age in Nigeria to growing up in the Bronx, you know, what's it like for you looking back at that? What's it like for you, looking back at that, but also what was it like for you to actually sit down and try to put words to paper?
I'll answer the first question, part of the question. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the story that I've been allowed to live. It wasn't always good, as you know, but it all made me the man I am today. You know, I have siblings, and I don't get into much detail about it in the book. I just touch on John, who's one of my older half siblings, because my mom was married before she married my dad. My dad was married years before he had married my mom. And, you know, my siblings had my oldest siblings, so about 20 years, 15 to 20 years older than me. They had a completely different life than I did. You know, they, you know, because my dad was very rich, and so they went to boarding school in London. They had the show for life. I mean, they were set up. I mean, they went to great colleges and then got out, and they were had great careers. And I mean, they had that right foundation. And my dad died when I was five, and we went from rich to poor, and I went down a completely different life and path than they did, but. And so we are two completely different people. And I'm so grateful that I didn't have the life they had. When I was younger, I wouldn't say that. But now looking back, I'm just so grateful because it made me who I am today. Your second part of your question, it was easy, man. It was easy. It was therapeutic to sit at the computer and get my life out there. For years, I have told my story orally. In different ways. I mean, it started, I would say, when I was in BUDS and SEAL training. You know, I talk about it a little bit in the book where guys were always fascinated. Man, like, how'd you get here from Africa? And you grew up in the Bronx. Man, that's a cool story. Like, I want to hear more. I've never met a... Because a lot of guys don't meet... There's not a lot of Black guys that go to SEAL training, period. So I'm in this class, and I'm like one of a few, maybe three Black guys in the class that's starting out with 250 to 270. And they're just fascinated, you know, and curious as to how I ended up there. And so I just started sharing my story with them, you know, at that point. And then it just continued on in my life. I would just share my story orally. So when I sat down to write, there were so many stories that were fresh in my mind. And I also did, you know, a lot of research, you know, interviewing people that, you know, I grew up with, guys I sold drugs with, guys I did all kinds of crazy things with, girls that I dated, all that stuff, to make sure it was fresh. So it all flowed. It was easy for me.
Definitely. And, you know, I see that your life was happening for you as it went. All the bad things, all of the crazy stuff you went through, it was happening for you to eventually prepare you for the man you were to become. And that's an amazing part of this. Let's go back a little bit to the beginning here with your father. Your father was a great man. He wanted to do whatever he could to help Nigeria to become prosperous. And you talk a bit about that in the book. He died, but he was also under duress when he died, right?
He, you know, his country was more important than a lot of other things in life, than 95% of the other things in his life. He was, you know, he was fighting the Nigerian government. I mean, he was fighting them in the midst of that battle. All of a sudden, you know, he gets bit by, you know, a dog. He contracts rabies. He goes to a hospital, gets bad medication administered to him. I don't think it's a coincidence. And then next thing you know, he's in a bathtub and he dies, you know? So it was a very, mysterious, situation, but he, as you said, he was under duress, a lot of duress.
He was literally, he had literally engineered an island that was going to be an industry center in Lagos. Right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the government decided it was going to seize that property. Today is worth what, like $8 billion?
Billions. And my dad had invested millions and millions of dollars of his own money into it. He put everything into it financially. And it still exists to this day. I mean, they're putting up multi-million-dollar homes on the island. You know, there are homes there. I'm sure there's at least one home on the island that's worth more than my dad initially invested to build the island. And now, you know, that island's worth billions. And my dad, one of my dad's security guards, he's like, they call him the Abba. So he works on the island now, you know. So there's a lot of controversy behind it.
And when I think of that situation, I think of your mother.
Yeah.
Because she literally had to go from that situation to doing whatever she could for you and your brother to survive. And that meant coming to the United States, coming back to her home city and literally putting work in just to make sure you guys were okay.
Yeah. And there's a story I didn't share in the book, but, you know, I'll share it here. When my dad died, one of the first thing she did, because she had no money, she had nothing. She called up her cousin, my uncle, and she said, "Hey, listen, I have not a nickel to my name. I have no way to pay the bills. Can you loan me some money?" And this guy wasn't a poor guy. He was a very successful businessman, very financially successful. He lived in upstate New York in a big house, nice car. I mean, he could spare the money. My uncle said to her, "Let me call you right back in about 5 minutes." 5 minutes later, the phone rings. My mom answers the phone. It's my uncle's wife. And she says, "How dare you call up my husband and ask him for money? Who the hell do you think you are to contact my husband? If you want something, you go through me. Don't you ever do this again." She hung up the phone on my mom. And my mom has told me many times that was the lowest point in her life. But that was also a point where she learned a key lesson that stuck with her. She was like, "I will never be put in a situation where I have to depend on another person ever again." And, you know, she put the pedal to the metal, and you know, as you said, she wore multiple jobs to put food on the table. I mean, you know, she would take jobs to just expose us to education. She's a trooper. People ask me all the time, "Where do you get it from? Like, how did you get through SEAL training? How do you get through writing your book? How do you get through all of these things you're doing now?" And I say, you know, I had a living example of perseverance every day of my life. You know, I had a woman that didn't just talk about it, but she lived it. And through osmosis, you know, I just kind of, you know, acquired it. You know, it's just part of my nature.
Yeah, there's that kind of, there's that tension in the book there, especially at the beginning, because you did have two parents.
Yeah.
One was your mother. And the other one was the Bronx and the neighborhood you grew up in.
Yeah.
And you see that tension there because here's the thing. I mean, I wouldn't talk bad about the Bronx because it gave you street smarts. It educated you in another way. But at the same time, it brought you down some paths that probably weren't the righteous paths, right?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, you know, being a young kid from the inner city, you know, when you don't have a father in your life, you just naturally look for a father. I mean, I think every boy is looking for his father, you know, to guide him, to be there for him, to affirm him. And same thing with a girl. I think every young girl is looking for her daddy to guide her, to affirm her, to show her what love is. And, you know, so that when she grows up, she's looking for the right thing. And, you know, I was looking for a father, you know, and I found my father, as you said, in the streets. And, you know, the streets taught me about hustling. The streets taught me about, you know, women and how to deal with women. The streets taught me about, you know, fighting. The streets taught me all of these things that I thought I needed to do and be in order to be a man, right? Mm-hmm. And it did lead me down a lot of dark paths, you know, from stealing, selling drugs, to running scams, to sleeping around with all kinds of girls, to partying, to being vulgar, to just being prideful and you know, and that was the man I was. I had become.
Absolutely. And obviously people can look at the book to see some of the different types of business ventures you got into and things like that.
Yeah.
But there were also some points there where you came close to the edge and very dangerous.
Yeah.
And what do you think it was that clicked in your mind that said, "All right, I can't run this scam anymore. I can't do this anymore." Mm-hmm. You know, there's that scene where the guy comes to your door and your mom's sleeping in the next room. What was going through your mind then that made the change right there?
For me, it was, you know, my mom was a big advocate for consequences for actions. and, you know, when we were young, you know, she would discipline us and her form of discipline. Her discipline of choice was spanking. And so from a young age, I always knew that if I do something wrong, something bad is going to eventually happen to me. I am going to deal with the consequences of my actions. And yes, I still did wrong things, but in the back of my mind, I was always looking over my shoulder. Where's the consequence? It's coming. I know it's coming. When is it going to come? And so when I had got to that point where, you know, I got in that situation with the drug dealer and he came to my house, that was the consequence. That was a life form of the consequence for all of the dirty things that I was doing. And you know, after, you know, I don't want to give away too much of what happened, but after that situation was settled for the most part, I knew that the consequences would get greater if I did not stop. And I didn't want to risk enduring whatever consequence would come my way if I didn't stop. Like, I made that decision. I was like, this is it. I'm done. And it all came from the way my mom raised me. And, you know, there are other kids, you know, who are, and I'm not saying spanky kids, I'm not saying that, but I'm going to say there are other kids who I grew up with, who I went to school with, and they didn't get disciplined. They didn't. And some of them are in prison. Some of them are dead, you know, because they never grasped that concept of there is a consequence for what I am doing. And so they just kept on doing what we were doing. There's a buddy of mine, Roderick from the book, he's sitting in prison right now. He just got released from one prison in Philadelphia, and he's in jail in New Jersey getting ready to get sentenced to another prison. Oh. You know, and he never really had discipline. He would come stay at my house with my mom, and you know, because we were hustling together. And he never really had that discipline. And so he never grasped that concept of consequence of actions, and now he is where he is. Which so many other kids. So that's what, sorry for the long answer, but that's essentially what got me to stop doing what I was doing.
And that's important to understand, I think, because, you know, we also have a lot of young parents who listen to this podcast too. And, you know, you think for your story, there's, you know, a few thousand stories of people who didn't get it.
Yeah.
And who kept falling through the system and who kept, you know, down that path. And today their lives, I mean, they might have some redemption at the end.
Yeah.
As far as when they get out of prison, but they're giving up a large part of life because they never learned that.
Yeah. And I tell parents all the time, you have to discipline your children. I'm not telling you how to discipline your children, but you have to discipline your children. You have to follow through because it's better for you to discipline your children at the age they are now than for the police to discipline your children or for a judge to discipline your children or for a prosecutor to discipline your children, right?
Exactly.
So you do it now while you can so that they can get those principles and so they can understand respect, keep your word, obey what I'm telling you to do now so that they do it later. So, you know, me and my wife, we discipline our kids, you know, and this is because I don't want my kids to end up going down. I know my kids have so much potential and I don't want that potential to be squandered because I just chose to be their friend and tell them everything you do is okay. Daddy's going to let you do whatever you want to do because I'm setting them up for failure.
How much do your own children know about that part of your life? Have you talked to them about it? Or
I try to. I mean, my oldest is 5, my middle is 4, my youngest is 4 months. So they see pictures in the house. It's funny. They see pictures of me when I was young, and they're like, "Daddy, what are you doing?" You know, "Daddy." I mean, they grasp more the concept of me being in the military than anything else. I have so many pictures of me in my uniform and stuff around the house.
And, you know, as far as going back, do you go back to the Bronx often or?
I'm there about 2-3 times a year. I'm actually going to be back in the Bronx. I'm flying to New York on Sunday. So I'll be there. I'll be there next week for a bit. And then I'm going back to Rikers Island. I was in Rikers Island last month speaking to the inmates, and I'll be back there speaking to the inmates again. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's hot there right now. Crazy hot. I was there last week.
Oh, is it? Well, that's good news because I'm doing a swim. I'm doing this this Hudson River swim from New Jersey to the Statue of Liberty, Statue of Liberty to Ellis Island, Ellis Island to the 9/11 Memorial, being a bunch of
stuff. Man.
It's called the SEAL Swim Across the Hudson, and it's to raise money for homeless veterans. So I'm glad you said it's hot because I'd rather be hot. Because for my book, you know, I don't do too well in cold water. So the hotter it is, the better it is.
Let's get into that aspect of it, too, because, you know, and again, not to give too much away from the book, but there is a point where you immediately decided that you had to go into the military.
Yeah.
And there was someone there that helped you out big time.
Yeah.
That was one of the most touching aspects of the story because, as we find out later on, she had a massive impact in your life. Kind of disappeared after that because, got carried on to other things. But, when you think about that recruiter, to me, it sounds like absolute grace. I mean, an angel came into your life and saved you.
100%. I mean, 100%. I mean, I had warrants out for my arrest. I should have been in Rikers Island. And instead of turning me in, she took me to the judges to get my record cleared. And, you know, I don't know where I would be. That's a pivotal moment in the story, you know, and the rest of the story wouldn't have happened if she didn't do what she did, you know. And yeah, I'm eternally grateful, you know. I'm so close with her family now. Her family has become my family. Her daughter's like my daughter. And, you know, I vow to just give back to her and her family as much as I can because of that one act that she did for me.
That was an absolutely amazing part of the story. And just to see how one person can impact the trajectory of another person's life through an act. And these opportunities are always out there.
Absolutely. Right?
There's always an opportunity to positively influence someone else.
Yeah.
You had some obstacles there too. You get into the Navy, but you didn't get a high enough ASVAB score in order to become a SEAL. So you ended up with us, the U.S. Marines, for a little bit as a corpsman, right?
Doc. Yep. Yeah.
The super doc, right?
Super doc, knock boots. I done heard it all. I done heard doc in all kinds of variations as it related to my nicknames.
And that part of the story, again, it's like, you know, you see that this transformation starting to take place. You become a more disciplined, you're learning the military lifestyle, you're learning what you have to do. And eventually you get into BUDS and, I think you got set back four times, right? Four pullbacks, right?
I got rolled for medical, and then I got two rolls for swim, and then I got kicked out.
Yeah, you got three times you got kicked out, and then you got to go back, right? When I think of that, that is enormous fortitude right there.
Yeah, man.
Because it's one thing to be in the process, but you almost got to the very end and then got kicked out.
And
so what was that time period like?
It's so funny. My aunt, I was at my aunt's house last night and for dinner, her and her husband and my uncle, and they read the book, and you know, they were talking about it. It was like, you know, cause they live in San Diego, and they're just like, Randy, like we knew you were still training. But we didn't know you were going through all that. You know, she's like, I remember when you came to the house and said you got kicked out of training, and you just spoke about it so nonchalantly, but I was feeling for you. She's like, I wanted to cry when you got out of civil training. I was just like, she's like, how did you do it? Like, how did you go back? And how did you go through all that again? And I said, you know what? I don't know. I said, you know, I just wanted it. I had nothing left, you know, I just wanted it, but I still can't believe I went through all of that, which is crazy. I couldn't do it now.
Right.
I don't care. Somebody said, hey, you go through all of that again for 6 months, I'll give you $1 million. I would say, hey, keep your $1 million. I couldn't do it. I just can't, you know, my body's too broken and it's too painful, but I don't know how I did it, man. I just wanted it. I pushed. I had nothing left. I had no plan Bs. And this is a lesson that I try to teach people all the time. When you're journeying towards your dream, you're dreaming. You can't have a plan B. You can't. You know, you have to burn the boats and storm the beach, because on your road towards your journey, if you have a plan B and you start facing adversity, that plan B is going to get really, really attractive. It's going to get really, really attractive. But you know, if you don't have a plan B and you face adversity, all you have is plan A. All you have is what's in front of you to keep charging forward. And that's what I had. I didn't have, hey, if I don't make it, I'm going to be SWCC. Or if I don't make it, I'm going to be EOD. Or if I don't make it, I'm going to go back to Marines and be a force recon. Or if I don't make it, I'm going to get out of the Navy, go in the Army and be an Army Ranger. I was like, I'm going to be a SEAL. That's it. There is no if, ands, or buts, you know? So that's what that I get. Looking back in retrospect, that's what it had to have been. No plan. And I had a deep rooted emotional reason why. You know, this is something else I try to teach people all the time, whether it's fitness, whether it's trying to be an actor, whether it's trying to be a doctor, whatever it is that you have aspirations to do, you have to have a deep rooted emotional reason as to why you want to do it. Because again, if you don't have a deep rooted emotional reason why, when you face adversity, you're going to fall away. If you have a superficial reason, oh, I just want to be a doctor because I want to be rich, or I just want to be an actor because I want to be famous, or I want to be Navy SEAL because people respect me. That superficial reason is not going to carry you through the hard times. It's just not. And as you face, the deeper the adversity comes, deeper you fall into adversity, the more that good idea is going to turn into a bad idea, you know? And so, you know, you have to have a deep rooted emotional reason as to why you want to do whatever it is that you want to do. And for me, again, it was, I had nothing left. And that's what anchored me. I didn't want to fail anymore in life. I had, as you know, from my book, I had failed so much up until that point. I had failed as a son. I had failed as a brother. I had failed in training. I had failed as a drug dealer. I had failed I had failed at every aspect of life up until that point. I didn't have the capacity to fail anymore. So those were my two deep rooted emotional reasons why. And looking back, that's what carried me through.
And that's the thing. You know, there's another way of putting this, and I tell this to people sometimes, but what I see also is that you had a focus almost more on process than you did on the outcome, right?
Yeah.
And that meant that you were constantly kind of, when you finally got into training, you were going after it, you start to look at your weaknesses and trying to see how you could strengthen those weaknesses, you know, strengthen the swim, you know, the training aspects and everything. And looking at that, I mean, you had your chances to go with other organizations as I saw in the book and you had your mind set on that, and you took the lessons as they came and you kept applying them to trying to get to that end goal, but it wasn't the outcome you were focused on. It was constantly that process.
Yeah, it's process. It's, you know, one thing that, you know, they teach us in BUDS is eat the elephant one bite at a time. You know, it's, you know, in Hell Week, and just using Hell Week as an example, the way instructors get guys to quit is, you know, the first hour of Hell Week is miserable. I mean, it's like they throw absolutely everything at you in the first hour. And Hell Week starts on Sunday, like around 5-7 at night, depending on the class, and it ends on a Friday. And as they're throwing everything at you that first hour, they tell you, you have six, this is the first hour, and you guys have six more days of this. You're not going to make it. Imagine six more days of this torture. And the guys who immediately think of day six, they quit. Because they're just like, I got to go through this first hour for six more days. And I had learned early on, I can't even think about this sixth day. I need to think about making it to the next minute. I need to think about making it to the next evolution. And as I did that, as I made it, let's say, to the next evolution, then my morale, you know, I had a boost in my morale. Yes, I made it through that evolution. Now my goal is to get to the next one. And, you know, I just ate the elephant one bite at a time. And as I did that, my motivation grew, guys quit, I stayed, and eventually I got to that sixth day, right? And again, that's a lesson that as a writer now, you know, I'm working on this project. I've been working on this project since about December, January, writing this film. And it's one of the hardest writing projects. It's the hardest writing project I have ever done. I wrote another project after I wrote the book, and this is my third, and, you know, it's tough, but I can't look at my last page and say, that last page is so hard to get to. I just got to look at, let me just get another page in. Let me just get another scene in. Let me just get another, scene of dialogue in. And as I attack that one bite at a time, instead of think of all of this other work I have to do, I get my morale boost, I get motivation, and I keep charging forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Just taking that one chunk at a time and really just, focusing on it, being present. That's a huge thing too.
Yeah.
That's such a huge thing. As you, and one more question about this, but by the fourth time going through, did you have a better sense of kind of the mental games and where your head would be at? Was the shock factor reduced?
Yeah, it was completely reduced. I knew absolutely everything that was going to get thrown at me. I just knew it was going to suck. So, I knew how long every evolution was going to be. I knew I had to do the hands behind my hands tied behind my back, feet tied together to swim. I knew I had to, do long breath holds. I knew everything. So it was just like, all right, it's kind of like when you're going to get a spanking by your mom. Okay, I know the spank is going to be bad. Let's go and get it over with. It's just like, okay, I know the beatdown session for the next 6 months is going to suck. But let's go ahead and take this beat.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now you get through SEAL training. You your life is completely different now financially. You've got a steady job. You've got a great job, but there's something still about you that's still not right.
Yeah.
And you talked about your history with women before,
yeah.
and the way you carried yourself with them. And I think, in terms of my own life, and this is where I really kind of empathized with you and kind of saw what was going on, because for externally, everything could look great. Super fit, successful, doing the stuff, but internally there's a little bit of a rock there, right?
No, it was, I was empty. I was, I had it all on the outside, but on the inside, I was just empty. I was still, again, going back to that affirmation, I never recall receiving affirmation from my dad. One, because I was 5 when he died, so I don't have a lot of memories of him. But two, after he died, I just didn't have a father who affirmed me. And I was I just had this hole in my heart, that nothing could fill. Women couldn't fill. I hadn't slept with every type of gorgeous woman on the face of this planet. And I had, I had partied at some of the greatest parties. I had money. I had a nice car. I was living in San Diego. I had the life on the outside, but in the inside, I was empty. I was broken. I have a lot of guilt from decisions that I had made in the past. I had shame. I had, I had a lot of regrets, and that ate, that hit me. And, long story short, at some point in my life, and I don't want to give it all away, but I just had time to reflect. I was sent off to, I would say, to a wilderness where I was just by myself in the middle of this wilderness trying to survive. Literally. And I had time to reflect on my life. And as I was reflecting, I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like who I was. And I knew that I needed to change my ways. I needed to change who I was. And, long story short, again, I don't want to give it all away. It's all in the book. That's when I came to faith. I came to faith in Jesus. And I was just like, my brother had been a Christian for a long period of time. And he had told me, because I was an atheist, I had fluctuated between atheism and agnosticism, depending on the day of the week. And my brother, who has been a Christian for a long period of time, would tell me, Remy, when you hit rock bottom, not if, but when you hit rock bottom, and after you've tried everything and nothing's worked, just try crying out to Jesus. And that's what I did. And, that's when my life, transformed spiritually. That's when I went from being an atheist to being a Christian. That's when that cold turkey I had went from having sex from age of 16, having sex and watching pornography to just cold turkey, not having sex at all, period. My language changed. Everything about me transformed, and to the point where there were guys who served with me who couldn't believe it. They were just like, Like, Remy, we're not going to the club. You're not going to go get drunk. You're not going to go chase this girl. Remy, what's going on with you? What's happening with you? And I was just like, man, like, I'm a different person now, man. Like, you know, I got this love in my heart now that I've never had before. I've never felt before. And, you know, I don't want to treat women like that. Women are to be honored and lifted up. Like, I don't want to, you know, treat my mom like this anymore. I don't want to, you know, lie and just be this crazy person anymore. Like, I want to be a good person. I want to live the reward and love people. Just be a light to people, and that was one of the transformations.
And you know, what would you say to a lot of these young men who might be in their teens or 20s, who would look at that and say, "Well, all I want is the women. I want the money. I want to have sex as much as possible. I want to, you know," and we see this a lot. Especially with guys in their 20s. I mean, the goal is to sleep with as many women as possible.
Yeah.
What would you say to somebody like that who's going through that? And I'm sure you've worked with a lot of young SEALs who are in that position too.
I mean, one thing I would say is, you know, it doesn't fulfill you. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you're never satisfied. You know what I mean? So that's one. So, I wouldn't wait till I figure it out myself. Well, you know, just look at the risk of it. You know what I mean? Diseases, you know what I mean? Like, you know, having a kid earlier than you want, you know what I mean? Like hurting somebody. And what I mean by that is if you don't have an intent to be committed to a woman, you know what I mean? And you're just going to hurt her. You know what I mean? You're just going to hurt her, especially if she wants to be committed to you. And, you know, I can't imagine living that life anymore, especially now being a father. You know, like, I can't imagine cheating on my wife, because now, you know, I talk to my kids about integrity. I talk to my kids about, you know what I mean? Like, living by example. I talk to my kids about, you know, doing things right. Like, how are they going to look at me? Right. If I tell them these things, and then I go ahead and cheat on my wife or treat her horribly or curse her out or beat her or whatever I do to her, you know, that's negative, you know? And so, you know, I would tell them, you know, one, it's not going to fulfill you. Two, think about your future. Three, ask yourself, if you have a daughter, would you want her to be treated that way?
Right. Right.
If you have a mother, which every human being on the face of this planet does, would you want her treated that way? If you have a friend, if whatever you have that's, you know, a female, do you want her to be treated that way? And how do you feel if she's treated that way? And that was something that I didn't really grasp until later. After I had done all of the things I did and reflected on it, I was just like, man, these girls, they have a family, they have moms, they have dads, they have siblings, they have kids, and I treated them like that. You know, and so that's another thing I would say. You know, think about your legacy.
Yeah, and understanding that sleeping around doesn't make you a man.
Right? It doesn't. No, it definitely doesn't. It doesn't make you a man. It makes you a boy. It makes you a boy. Right. It takes a man to be committed to a woman. To me, that's true manhood. Being committed to a woman and treating her as she should be treated. It takes more strength and integrity and manhood to do that than it does the latter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, looking at you through your SEAL career, you chose a career path that not a lot of SEALs choose, with intelligence and, you know, going through that. And again, we get to this concept of how your life prepared you for what was to come.
Yeah. Right?
So, you know, those street smarts, they eventually paid off when you got to your deployments and when you got in a combat zone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the Bronx had prepared me, you know, not just in intelligence, but also just in operating. You know what I mean? Just, you know, being aware of my surroundings, being comfortable in that environment, growing up in the Bronx and, you know, working in the countries that I worked in, you know what I mean? I'm not going to say they're exactly the same, but, you know, I felt like I had been prepared to be in those environments my whole life. And, yeah, like you said, you know, I did a lot of what we call human intelligence. HUMINT is a paraphrased version of it. And I got a chance to work with sources, carry money, gather intelligence, you know, do all kinds of cool things. And, you know, a lot of how I was able to do it came from my background. I knew how to read people, you know, just growing up in the streets, through osmosis, you learn how to read people. You learn when somebody's BSing you. You learn when somebody's trying to scam you out of money. You learn when somebody's trying to play you a sweet talk. You learn all these things by just walking the streets of Ford Road, the street I grew up on, you know? And so when I'm in the Middle East and I'm running sources or I'm interrogating people, whatever it is I'm doing, I immediately know off the bat, like, how to connect with this person, how to reach this person, how this person is... whether the person is relaying truthful information or not truthful information to me, you know, so it all prepared me. And that's, you know, again, you know, I know I'm throwing out a lot of lessons, but, you know, I just try to throw out lessons when I talk, but, you know, nothing is wasted in life. I don't believe that anything is wasted in life. You know, I don't care if you work at McDonald's and your only job at McDonald's is to sweep the floor. There is a lesson in that. I don't care if you're, you know, a janitor, whatever it is you do, there are lessons in that that can translate to other aspects of life. And there were so many lessons that I had just learned through osmosis, living in the Bronx, working different jobs, selling drugs, you know what I mean? Doing the things that I did, you know, working in the clinic and my first command, Naval Hospital Camp Pendleton, work checking in babies and doing vital signs and assisting on pap smears. Like there are lessons that I gave from all of that that just kept rolling on. And again, you know, the title of my book is Transformed. And I think a key aspect to transformation is applying lessons that you learn through life, you know, those lessons, when you apply them, they lead to greater transformation. And I don't think I would have had the transformations I had if I didn't just take those lessons. Case in point, you know, when I was preparing to go to SEAL training the first time, I didn't have anybody to teach me how to train. I didn't have anybody to teach me how to swim starting out. I didn't have anybody to teach me how to study the ASVAB. But what I did have was I had the lessons that my mom had just ingrained in me about repetition, read it again, write it again, do it right, come up with a plan. These are all things my mom had just taught me through life, so that when I got to that point of how do I prepare for this program, I was able to figure it out, you know, so, and that led to me transforming into from a skinny guy to a guy who now can swim and who had the muscle to go to SEAL training. So, you know, nothing is wasted in life. I don't care what it is that you're doing right now. It's not a waste. Take, you know, if you have to get a notepad, get a book, write down at least one lesson a day from what you, you know, a lesson that you learned from the job that you're doing, because there's a lesson there.
Absolutely. And, you know, the big thing I got from this book and I'd mentioned to you before is that, you know, transformation as you're going through it, you know, life is difficult and transformation to anything is hard, right? Yeah. As long as it's a transformation upward, right? But in life, because it's difficult, a lot of times you have to be able to reach beyond yourself in order to be able to accomplish anything. Yeah. And in your story, that comes from grace, it comes from God.
Yeah.
And I see that constantly throughout your story. And I have to say, it's one of the most inspirational aspects of the book.
Yeah.
Is understanding that.
Yeah.
Because we turn our wheels here, but if we're not transforming ourselves completely, both on the spiritual side and on the physical side, then it's not going to come through completely. Yeah.
No, you need hope, man. I mean, I'm writing this film now, and, you know, so it's so interesting. I was, it's a historical Black film. It's about one of the first groups of African Americans to serve in special operations during a time when, you know, African Americans were considered nothing, right? You know, we treated horribly. And one of the questions that I had to ask myself as I was writing this film is, man, why? Like, why would they serve this country in the midst of the current treatment that they were enduring? You know what I mean? And the answer that just kept coming to me through my research and and through the characters, because I try to write organically in a way where the characters speak to me. I don't like to tell them what to say. I like to allow them to tell me what to say and put on paper is hope. The answers of hope just kept coming up. And, you know, as a person of faith, you know, hope is the foundation of faith. It's one of the key foundations of faith, you know, and when everything around you is going bad, when you've lost your husband or wife, and when you've lost your job, when your kids are driving you crazy, you know, or when things are just not going your way consistently, if you don't have anything to hope for, you will lose your mind. And that's what I think was happening to me at that point in my life when I finally came to faith in Christ, was I didn't have anything to hope for. I had everything on the outside, but I didn't have anything to hope for. And now I do. Yeah, big bad Navy SEAL writer, this and that. But you know what? I have hope in the fact that God is with me. I have hope in the fact that regardless of how bad things may look, God has a plan. I may not understand that plan. I may not like that plan. But everything that has happened to me, God has orchestrated, and it's been good. The outcome has eventually been good, and I have hope that the outcome of whatever I'm going through will eventually be good. It may not be good as I'm going through the process of it, but it'll eventually be good. And if it doesn't end up good in this life, you know what? It'll end up good when I close my eyes and end up in heaven, right? And so, you know, hope. That's a big thing for me. And that's why that part of that transformation for me was huge, because I finally have hope every day.
That's a really important thing. And I think, you know, a lot of people, I think they conflate faith and hope with luck, right? Yeah. And it's different, because faith takes work, man.
Yeah, it really does.
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah,
100%, 100%, and you have to put the work in order to develop more faith. You know,
yeah.
Definitely a big theme from this book. You know, Remy. Number one, I want to say thank you for writing this, and thank you for coming on. I'd been going through some stuff. I recently found some stuff out about my origin story.
Oh, wow.
Where I threw a 23andMe test.
Oh, wow.
I found out I was a sperm donor baby.
Wow.
And completely different heritage, completely everything I thought I knew about myself was completely done. Reading this helped me so much.
Yeah.
And helped me to come back to faith in my life.
Amen.
And, you know, it's, I really appreciate what you're doing here, because now through you, thousands of people can be put onto a better path. And,
amen.
And I think it's amazing.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you. And thanks for sharing that, man. And, going back to hope, man, everything happens for a reason, right? You know who you are, you know that you've done amazing things, and you're going to continue to do amazing things regardless of who your dad is or isn't or any of that stuff.
100%. So we know the Transformers movie, you've been acting. Where is life taking you now? You mentioned you have this project you're working on.
Yeah.
For you.
Well, I finished working on another movie with Michael Bay called Six Underground. I was a lead consultant on that film, as far as, you know, just action shooting and all that kind of stuff. And that releases in the winter, December 2019. I'm writing films now. You know, I got the confidence to write after writing my book. I was just like, wow, like, I was able to do that. I'm sure I could write a film. And so I had this idea. I've had this idea for a film a long period of time, this espionage thriller. And so I sat down and I wrote it. And came out great, and it opened up a lot of doors for me in the film and TV industry. And then I started writing my second film, which is the project I'm on now. And so my next steps are, you know, taking these out to the market. and they get the main, you know? So, and then there's a lot of interest from studios and executives in the industry to turn my book into a film. So that's another reason why I've been trying to jam out as much as of these other projects, scripts as I can, so that when I get into these meetings, I can say, well, you know, not only do I have my book that we can turn to a film, but I have these other projects. So I'm just trying to be strategic there, you know, have more irons in the fire.
Absolutely. Create a pipeline for yourself. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, I'm still traveling and speaking throughout the country. And then working in the nonprofit space with inner city at risk kids, going to jails, doing a swim for homeless veterans next week. So, yeah, I got a lot of things going. And being a family man, I got to married with three boys. So that's a job in and of itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know there's a lot of different channels you can get a book. What's the best way of getting this book? Because I want to see this on the bestseller list. What's the best way for people to get this?
Amazon. I mean, you get Amazon easy day. I mean, especially if you got Prime or whatever it is to get that quick delivery, you can do that. Or you go to your local bookstore, you go to Barnes & Noble's. Buy it there if they sold out, because I keep getting messages from people. I went to three different Barnes & Noble's and they sold out. Then, you know, just when you go to Barnes & Noble's and if it's sold out, just ask me what nearest store has it, and they'll point you to the nearest store that has it if you want to get it right away. But in the meantime, you know, Amazon's probably your best book, the best bet. Other bookstores have it, Indie Books, Books a Million, independent bookstores. So you need to get them there as well.
Awesome. And we'll get some links up on the show notes for this. The book is called Transform by Remy Adeleke. And like I said, it's probably the best book I've read this year. And it's definitely had an impact on my life, and I know it'll have an impact on yours. So,
thank you. And if you can do a review on Amazon, because the more 5-star reviews the book has, the more Amazon, just through the analytics, they drive traffic to my sales page. So if you could do a review and encourage others who read the book to do reviews, that would be great.
100%. I put a review up the other day, and we'll put a link up to the review area as well. So
thank you.
Awesome. Well, Remy, again, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for the work you do. You know, like you said earlier, transformation never stops.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly transforming. I know a lot of you out there are constantly transforming. I know Remy's still transforming.
Yeah.
So I wish you the best of luck with everything here. And God bless you, man.
God bless you too, my brother. Thank you so much, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Definitely. For everybody out there, get out there. Live your best lives while you can.
Amen.